Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Why don't you suck and fuck Home Alone's 1 and 2, dude? Why don't you just go into a hotel room with them and have your wicked way with them and then come back when you're ready to talk to me about the real deal? Hello and welcome, everyone, to the worst idea of all time, emergency season, with your friends and esteemed associates, Guy Montgomery and, of course, Tim Batt. Tim, how are you?
Bad. We're in the middle of a global pandemic and I'm trapped inside my house. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks. Very, very honest answer of you and of me, actually. So, Tim and I have just sat down, not together, but, well, not physically, but certainly in spirit, to embark on a little emergency season of the podcast. We've sworn off doing this so many times that it probably requires more than one hand to count.
In actual fact, I just finished editing up the London live show. No, sorry, the Los Angeles one with Paul F. Tompkins, where PFT tells us to stop doing this. And that was off the back of the season before when he also told us to never do this again. And here we are.
That's right. A lesson we refuse to learn until it is beaten into us with a bludgeon. This is a season of the podcast that will last for as long as the world is the way it is. We, of course, understand that many of you are trapped within your houses, not unlike Tim Batt and myself, and also not unlike one Alex Pruitt, the star of Home Alone 3.
Yeah. If ever there was a sequel that begged the question, why did we make this, I think it's Home Alone 3, right?
That's right. So yesterday I was online and a friend had sent me a message on social media that said, if you guys aren't holed up watching Home Alone 3, I don't know what you're doing with yourselves. And I said, we're not, but we could be. I put it to Tim. Tim is an enthusiastic and intelligent guy who immediately embraced the idea with open arms, which brings us to this present moment. We've both just watched Home Alone 3 for the first time. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday. Not that time, days, months, or the calendar year has any value to society at present.
No.
And, well, we've seen it once. Tim, I'd love to know your thoughts.
Well, it sucks. I hated it. I hate that we're back doing this, but I think that's as it should be. I think that's very in the spirit of the worst idea of all time, that a mate of yours just sent you a message and here we are embarking on a huge commitment of time and mental energy off a dumb whim, a silly whim. This movie, surprisingly, written by John Hughes. Surprising for two reasons. Number one, I thought he had nothing to do with Home Alone 3, which was part of the reason why it was so bad, because I had never seen this movie before, but I did know it was bad. And also because I thought John Hughes had died before this movie came out.
I didn't know that John Hughes wrote it, even at the time that we were talking to each other, until he just said as much. But I do have a slightly contradictory opinion to yours on the film itself, Tim, which is that it absolutely fucks. It kicks ass.
God damn.
I enjoyed that. It was a romp. It was an enjoyable romp.
You call everything a romp. Every movie we've ever watched, at some point you've called a romp. Because a romp works in any direction.
Untrue. Well, I don't want to call it a triumph, but I think that this movie is a success. I don't know what it did at the box office. I don't know what the critics said. But from woe to go, it acknowledges its forebears in the Home Alone franchise and also boldly says, hey, but we're going in a slightly different direction. We're fusing two genres of movie. Still with the pratfalls, the booby traps, the laughs that we've known along the way without our iconic child star, but introducing a new child star in the form of a boy whose name I do not know.
Yeah, me neither. We'll probably learn it by the end of the season. But, man, you couldn't be more wrong. This movie sucks and it denigrates the franchise. Although, I fell into some deep wiki holes after, and I'll admit, during watching this, and found out that Home Alone 4 was a straight-to-TV movie, and Home Alone 5 is something that exists.
Oh, my God.
I also found out, because I got real obsessed by how shit these bandits are as compared to the wet bandits, Harry and Marv from Home Alone 1 and 2, portrayed by Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern. And I've been doing a lot of reading on Daniel Stern. Do you want to hear about him?
Absolutely.
So Daniel Stern is the taller of the two, if you're familiar with Home Alone 1 and 2, but not who Joe Pesci is.
Yeah, a really useful way of doing it is he's the one who's not Joe Pesci.
And so he didn't have the most fruitful career after Home Alone 1 and 2. He directed a few episodes of The Golden Years and narrated even more of the episodes of that show. But then went on and did a whole bunch of other stuff. So he opened up a boys and girls club in, I think, Miami, where he lives maybe, in the wake of the Columbine shootings to kind of look after the community there. And that has been a great mechanism for the community to send kids that wouldn't normally get the opportunity to go to college to be able to get a tertiary education. He has pursued his love of bronze, like statue making, you know, like... And all around is just a great guy. Also, his son is, I assume, the youngest senator that is sitting at the moment. He's the first millennial to make it to the US Senate.
Holy shit. Macaulay Culkin really scared that guy straight. Yeah. Way to pick up the broken pieces and put your life back together, eh? It just goes to show that even the most buffoonish of hoodlums can straighten their course, you know, given the right encouragement.
Yeah, Daniel Stern rules, and he was a great villain, a great bandit, a great fall guy, a great idiot, like movie idiot, because he just threw everything into it. In fact, from like both being a child and now later as being an adult who kind of sort of knows a little bit about the mechanics of film and television making, that iconic scream he does when the tarantula is on his face in, I think it's the first one, and he peeks out the microphone, that is like seared into my memory. It's such a good scream. Daniel Stern rules, and he's not in this movie.
Yeah, you're using Daniel Stern as a conduit through which you can discuss your two favoured Home Alone films, whereas I'd rather get into the nuts and bolts, the nitty-gritty of this Home Alone 3. Tim, seeing as you didn't like it, why don't you describe the basic overall plot of the movie?
Well, in spite of the name, it's about a kid who is home alone very little of the time, who gets chicken pox for the first...
You know, yeah? I knew you'd level this criticism at the film, and on one hand, it's valid. Yes, they have found a loophole through which the kid is technically home alone and that he does have the chicken pox and his mum begrudgingly goes to the office to neglect him, even though he is wise beyond his years at 8 years old. But they do get him in the house alone, and when it all comes down to it, you know, in the sort of the pratfall segment of the movie, the final sort of 30 to 40 minutes, when the mum finally leaves. Like, I feel like the movie gives a knowing wink to us, the intelligent audience, as his mum clears the house and we go, well, okay, now the boy's finally home alone and you know what's around the corner.
Man,
these
it's
pesky
like,
villains.
It's like they forgot. The first 20 minutes of this film, they tried and failed to make a Die Hard movie. Like, the starting bit of a Die Hard movie. which is just terrible. You're following these four, like, cartoonish, because it's a kid's film, two-dimensional villains, but they really, like, go to lengths to try and develop the Bond villain scheme of what they're... There's, like, a computer chip and a missile system.
And so they do a good US job. Do you know how the head honcho villain who they're securing the computer chip for describes it?
Go on.
He says, whoever possesses the chip could dominate the region.
The region.
We do not know where or how big the region is, but we know it's a powerful chip. Sorry, the entire region, no less.
The whole region, folks. Your whole region would be taken over by this one computer chip, which has a serial number on it that suggests it was produced by the US Air Force. But the scheme is later revealed to be a North Korean scheme, which is being implemented by Russian operatives. So I don't know what the fuck's going on.
These are guns for hire, Tim. I love that right out the gates, they say this is a different film. We've got the Home Alone title on it, but this is we're not afraid to go in a bold new direction with the film. And then they sort of, after that Die Hard intro, as you accurately described it, is right up there with Die Hard in terms of really groundbreaking, immersive stuff.
Not what they, I said.
They pivot hard back into Home Alone territory with this adorable young boy who we only grow to love and respect throughout the film. What do you think of his performance, by the way?
Oh, he's fine. I don't know. He's a fucking kid. He was actually pretty good. But there's something about Kevin McAllister, you know, Macaulay Culkin's portrayal of the kid character that's even... There's a special... Like, I've never seen anything like Macaulay Culkin because he's got that precocious kid thing down so well. And a lot of it is... This is why I'm so confused that this was written by John Hughes. It's like these movies were written by different people. Because the first two movies are like... They're just... They're like, the lines that they give Kevin McAllister to deliver are like...
Why
funny
don't you
and cute,
suck
precocious.
And fuck Home Alone's 1 and 2, dude? Why don't you just go into a hotel room with them and have your wicked way with them and then come back when you're ready to talk to me about the real deal?
Hey, Monty, Alex don't, Pruitt, don't get cross at me because I, like every other person on earth, is outraged by how bad Home Alone 3 is.
Give me your three biggest problems with it.
Number one, they feature a logo which I'm sure is a nod to the Trilateral Commission, which is a nod itself to the New World Order. I don't fuck with that shit, okay? Number two, they couldn't source Catherine O'Hara, so they got a lookalike who admittedly does a pretty admirable job, but you can't go replicating people you can't cast in your movie with people who look like people who you should be casting in your movie. And number three... You can't pretend like the first two movies didn't happen and just slap the title in there and call it a franchise, okay? We've got to have a little fucking continuity to this universe.
There's no erasure. They don't pretend the first two movies don't exist. They just know better than to dredge them up and hold them up in front of people who want an exciting new direction. Also, to your second point, Haviland Morris is a saint. She turns in a performance for the ages, okay?
Then, Guy, why is she working in real estate now? Why is she a registered real estate agent?
Because even the best actors need a backup plan, all right? There needs to be a security net beneath a terrifying career in the arts. I didn't know she was a real estate agent, and I honestly feel like that's a decision she made separate from how well her career was going. Not everyone wants to be in the public eye.
Are you insane?
On a rocket ship for the stars, baby.
Yeah, but I don't think it was her choosing that she got let off the rocket ship. I don't think the rocket ship was taking off and she opened the latch and went, well, this is my stop, while the rocket was going 250 miles an hour.
You don't get on a rocket ship without a parachute, you dead shit. I think that... This is like, it's just, you've got to get those first two movies out of your head, all right? This is an hour 40 of a young boy up against it. It's got some of the fable of the boy who cried wolf sewn throughout it, even though when this boy's crying wolf, he can see the wolf. It's just that everyone else is choosing to think he's a liar, all right? It's got a young Scarlett Johansson turning in a powerhouse performance. It's got your iconic older kid brother from that late 90s sort of TV movie genre.
It's Kmart Buzz. Just get Buzz.
It is. Honestly, the late 90s was such a tough time to be playing the older brother in movies. This kid, like, his performance, his script, like, what he was given to do is just so bare bones. Like, cool guy. I took screenshots of him the whole way through the movie. I'm going to pump them out. It was a it was a brutal era for kid actors. The older brother, yeah. That's one of the hardest roles to nail down.
But for his look, because he's got quite a strong look to him, I think that was those were the roles he was going to get, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Looks like a pretty butty, red-headed kid actor. Like, those are the sorts of roles that you're going to get.
He sort of looks like Reese from Malcolm in the Middle, only someone put him in, like, you know, Photoshop and just stretched out the edges and just made him a bit wider and broader.
Yeah, that's quite good. Yeah. Yeah. Look, the kid's good. The kid is good. And I'm not going to fully take on board your point about ignoring the first two movies from whence this film got its title. But I will say that whilst he might not be Macaulay Culkin, he is really good. I'd be keen to know how old the actor was, because the character's 8 years old. And so I know often with kid actors, they get like some 20-year-old who's got a hormone deficiency who looks 8 because they can pull off the script a lot better. And I wonder if that's what was going on here.
Yeah, he was born in 1989. The film came out in 87. So he would have actually been 8. They cast him to age. I thought he was fantastic. And I think I actually wrote down in my notes that there's a lot of Tim Yat about the young lad. He's tech savvy. He's self-determined. And in that world, I also cast myself as Doris the Mouse, sort of skeptical and capable, but emotive and ultimately impressed. I think I saw a lot of us in this film, Tim, and it might be part of why I enjoyed it so much.
I am shook that you have cast yourself as the mouse in a film that is littered with humans. There's too many people in the movie, and instead of picking one of them, you picked an on-screen mouse. And not a mouse like Stuart Little, an actual mouse.
I wanted to hitch myself to the Tim Batt, Alex Pruitt wagon, and so help me, I have. I also thought that you would get a real kick out of all of the technology on display in the film. I felt like they had a lot of fun speculating as to what sort of modern technologies would be available to high-end criminals in the late 90s.
What I did like is there is one point in the movie where his mum rattles off all of the ways that he can get in touch with her, and it dates the movie to almost the month of when they shot it, because she goes, here's my beep, here's my pager, here's my office number, here's my fax number, and here's my cellular. And that is the word she uses. Here is my cellular. And when she pulls it out, when she's talking to him, it looks like she's talking into a scientific calculator. It's it's a rollicking good ride for people who are fond of retro tech.
Also, I felt like her upright response earlier in the film, the first time that she leaves the house and we finally see Alex truly home alone, in quotations, is when she sort of gets begged off by this quite domineering and annoying boss, some faceless male voice down the phone who's pretty much putting her under the pump.
A real Tom,
and saying,
if you know your Sex in the City too.
Oh, a big Tom. And he's saying, if you don't come down the office and neglect your 8-year-old boy who has the chicken pox, pretty much your job's going to be in jeopardy. And she sort of stares down the barrel of what's happening and says, okay, understood, I'm coming in, but I want you to know this. I fucking don't like what you're doing. You're being a real menace. And in that respect, I think the film is almost a feminist text. 1997, you know, she's a regular Miranda. She's an absolute Cynthia Nixon standing up to Tom. Maybe not the public eye, but certainly showing a lot of spine, a lot of backbone that would not necessarily be bestowed upon a character who is essentially, you know, reduced to a housewife in different movies of the same time.
I guess in that moment, like if you take those few frames of that scene playing out, you could construe that as a feminist portion of the text. But Catherine O'Hara is so good in her role that she, like, just, fuck, man. She is so uniquely good on screen. And especially in, I think, the first two Home Alones, because I watched them so many times as a kid. Like, even then, I could recognize, you know, this woman, great about her.
I watched Waiting for Guffman 2 nights ago, and she is just like nearly always the funniest thing about anything she's involved in. I don't disagree.
It's crazy, yeah.
But I genuinely did. I did have a soft spot.
Hey, hold on. Sorry, could I just ask you? Have you ever heard the conspiracy theory that Elvis Presley is in? I think it's the first Home Alone.
No.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So when John Candy comes to pick them up, or like meets Catherine O'Hara, I think, in the airport, and he's, fuck, does he have a band or something? There's some reason why he's driving a van, like, cross state lines, and he ends up giving them a lift. And I think during the exchange, if you look over the shoulder of John Candy, there's a guy, and there was like this conspiracy theory online that it is actually Elvis. And for some reason, because you know, Elvis isn't dead. And for some reason, Elvis was in the
band. Well, that's what they want you to think.
What do you mean? They want me to think he's alive?
No, I mean, everyone wants you to think Elvis is dead, but we don't know that.
Oh, no, exactly. Yeah. He's not dead. He's alive. And he's in Home Alone. I want to say it's the first one that happened.
And he's living in Home Alone 1.
Yeah, exactly. He's trapped in there. Sorry, I interrupted your thought.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to say, I understand it's very difficult not to get caught up on the brilliance of Catherine O'Hara, but Helen Morris does more than a serviceable job, a good job. And then by the same token, I thought Kevin Kilner, who is like, we're looking at Catherine O'Hara light and Phil Hartman light, and he plays the dad. I don't really know what else he's from, but I thought
Phil
Hartman's
not in Home Alone.
No, I know, but like they were casting to that type.
Yeah. He's actually the only one who surpasses, I think, the original. The dad in Home Alone, I can't remember who that is, but I think this dad does a better job. No, but he's not on screen very much.
You'll drown in reminiscing about the Home Alones if you're not careful.
Can I pick your brain on something? Earlier you brought up the fact that he's 8 years old and gets left alone for ages because his mum gets dragged into the office. What's the legality around that in the US of A? Do you know?
Because I know super illegal.
In New Zealand, you've got to be 13. 12 or 13.
13 seems right. Like you would choose a teen year, right?
Now that you say 12, that sounds right to me though. It's one of those two.
Either way, 8, and I think that's more or less across the board, as I understand it.
How old was your older sister Alice when she started looking after you without any parents around?
I couldn't tell you, but it was the 90s, and I was in Christchurch, New Zealand. It was not relaxed, but certainly I feel like, well, actually, no, because I remember I was old enough at one point.
I mean, don't Google Christchurch in the 90s if you want to have a clean picture of what a city was, free of any crimes involving children.
Yeah. Well, no. Don't do any research. I'm just saying, I don't remember how old I was. And I think it feels like that 12, 13 area was when it was like, okay, well, we can leave you for an hour or a couple of hours and not get too worried. Obviously, this guy is, I mean, he essentially brings down a network of criminals that the FBI have been chasing for 7 years, just with stuff that was lying around their house. The guy's obviously well ahead of his years in terms of what he's capable of. And so I think in knowing that, you can give him a little bit of a longer rope. But my first thought when she goes to work and he's home alone, he spots the crooks scouting out one of the other neighborhood houses, calls the cops arrive. That, you know, the crooks have cleared out. There's no evidence that what he's reported is true. And the mum's racing home. And she's like, oh, the cops are there. My first thought was on her behalf being like, oh, shit, the cops are going to ask me why the hell I left my 8-year-old boy at home. Like, it feels illegal. It has to be illegal.
And, it crossed my mind. And then it's actually the scene where she, not Catherine O'Hara, what's her name again? Heavenland Morris is on the phone to her boss. This is the kid's mum. And she gets off the phone and he says, what's the bit of legislation that he quotes? What about Family Something Act? Fair Families Act or something like that. Which just drives home the fact that this is a movie in which laws exist, you know, and people pay attention to them.
Yeah, I had no... I mean, obviously it exists in a heightened reality and we don't need to examine the internal logic of some parts of the criminal enterprises or the actual physical functionality of some of the booby traps. And I was totally immersed in the world of the film all the way until the first sound effect when the two of the crooks bang their heads together over a hedge, and it's like they've used a sort of hollowed out coconut against coconut sound from the cartoon. Looney Tunes universe.
Yeah.
And this is a decision that they decide to stick with for the rest of the film. I mean, for the entire film. And at first when I heard it, I was like, oh, that's a bit of a disappointment. Like, I was really in it and it pulled me out of it. But then once I saw what they were doing with it, I came around to it and I thought, because these are really violent, and this is true of the entire franchise, the punishment that he's doling out to these guys is so violent. Like, it would be fatal in any normal world.
Absolutely.
He kills four adults.
Yes.
Twice each, at least.
Yeah, definitely.
And so the cartoonish sound effects sort of at least couch it in a lighter, more PG realm.
Yeah, and that always, I was never like, because I hate seeing people get injured on screen. Real life, I fucking love it. I actually go and seek it out. Sometimes I instigate it, but on screen, I can't really handle it. And that, or the bit that stays in my mind from, I think it's number one, Home Alone 1, is when Harry steps on a nail and it goes through his foot on the stairs. Like, but fucking hate that.
That's the thing, is the ones that make you squeamish, and they're more visceral. Like, those are the ones
Do you know what one did it for me in this one, though? When a guy pulls a fucking operating petrol-powered lawnmower onto himself from a height. And it's horrific because you see it coming towards the camera. And you're like, and it's got the rotating blades. Fuck, man. I hated that. Absolutely hated it.
Yeah. What were... can I ask you actually at this point, because we seem to be at... different stages of our relationship to Home Alone 3 already, in that you really didn't like it, and I
will never truly love this movie. This is trying to be an ex-partner that will always have my heart. It's trying to be a copy of that.
Well, with that in mind, could I ask you for your shining light, please?
It's not a shining light. Okay. This bit I enjoy. You're going to hate this. I enjoyed this because it's a reference to the first film when Alice, who is the one female villain of the four and one of the other villains, has the scene where the guy has a mouse located in his crotch and his burnt out crotch because he's already been electrified in a chair. And the mouse crawls into sort of the cavity and is hanging out, and Alice gets really freaked out about this and grabs, I think it's a hockey stick from memory.
It is.
And fucking slams him in the nuts, which is, they kind of follow beat for beat the scene that Harry and Marv engage in with that, where I think it's Buzz's tarantula that Marv is trying to smash off Harry's face. Maybe his nuts as well. I can't remember. But yeah. So I like that. A little bit of homage to the OG.
I also actually thought the camera, like as the character, also the villains' names I thought were so funny. They gave them such good fake names. They were Peter Bopera, Alice Ribbons, Burton Jernigan, and Earl Unger. Like, those are fantastic names. Burton.
They don't sound Russian though.
Burton Jernigan is like
that's
just
the chef from Muppets, isn't it?
That is a perfect assembly of syllables. But the guy you were talking about is Earl Unger. And they all the villains, like, to imbue them with a seriousness, they all refer to one another as Mr. or Miss. Like, it's always Mr. surname.
It's so funny you like this, because I wrote down, like, I took very few notes, but I just wrote down, this movie is so unfun. Because, like, in the first two movies, there's extended sequences where Kevin McAllister enjoys his absence from adults. It's kind of what is so integral to the enjoyment of Home Alone, is it's about a dream realized that you're a kid, you've suddenly, you're awash with capital, you've got your dad's credit cards, the world is your oyster, you can eat as many pizzas as you want, you can order adult films from the hotel, you can go on a spending spree at the toy store, you can get the penthouse apartment in Trump Tower, but none of that exists in this movie. It's just about an upper middle class 8-year-old kid who's already kind of got all the toys. And he's very rarely left alone until 40 minutes into the film. They remembered the name of the movie is Home Alone 3, so they have to, like, quickly instigate those circumstances.
I feel like that's fair. Like, the fun and games of this movie aren't the same as the initial Home Alones. Like, you are just dealing with a kid who is at home with the chicken pox. By the way, this guy's got one of the most mild cases. Aesthetically, he looks like he's got a pretty serious case of the chicken pox. But in terms of symptoms, I mean, he's barely itching himself at all.
If you're young, though, chicken pox don't mess you up too bad, do they?
Nah, they're fucking scratchy, man. They're not like as an adult.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's very clearly a mechanism to keep him at home. And that is then abandoned, and fair enough. What am I getting bogged down in the nitty-gritty about it? I do agree they abandon the fun and games, but I just thought...
Well, they do. What they do is, I think they treat the violence as the fun and games, because they stay in that for ages, and they're just like, we're going to have more bandits, and we're going to spend most of the film fucking them up. And that's not my idea of a fun movie, to be honest. That's just America's Funniest Home Videos on steroids.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I felt like I could see the fun they were having in the writer's room. Like, it was, sure. They were so inventive with the ways that they could get this boy to kill these grown-ups.
Yeah. What were your faves? What were your top traps?
I liked, and this is by design within the film, the first wave of booby traps, because it's like, that's the come on of hallucinogens. That's that ticklish moment in your life when you're thinking things are about to get really good.
Lita, for the people who haven't seen it, come on, juice us up. What are we talking here?
We're talking about the character who eventually gets his nuts cracked by a hockey stick, Earl Unger, Mr. Unger. He approaches the perimeter of the house, and young Alex has set up this sort of very primitive-looking electric fence with a sort of kid handwritten sign saying, danger, electric currents or whatever. And he's like, oh, I remember, it seems so long ago I was a kid. And I really loved the nostalgia of that line. I genuinely did. I really felt it. He says, I remember when I was a kid, you almost forget how stupid they are, while he is taking out his Leatherman pliers and advancing towards this electric current. Like, it's so insane. And this is a character who is my favorite of all of them, by the way. He had my shining light right out of the gates when they were scouting the airport. So the jeopardy of this movie is set up because they have secured this US Air Force chip that helps people control the entire region, and they've hidden it inside of a remote control toy car that's bought from a popular toy store, not FAO Schwartz, but was it Parisian? Was that the name of the store?
I thought it started with a P, because when I read it real quick, I was like, it looks like the word Parisian.
Yeah,
like,
I think
with
it is.
Some letters missing.
Parisian or Parisian. I don't know what the pronunciation is, but anyway, to check it through airport security, they put the chip inside of a toy car and they check it through security, and then it gets picked up by the wrong person, who eventually leads them back to the suburban street in Chicago. But after it first gets picked up and they realize they're in this very busy airport and they need to find the mistaken bag, everyone's sort of looking, and it's quite a frantic scene. And then this guy, Mr. Unger, they're like, I checked all of the premium lounges and the bars, he wasn't there. And they're like, well, I checked all of the departure gates and he wasn't there. And then this Mr. Unger says, when I was in the John, I didn't see anything in there. And I'm like, this guy is going against the grain. The others are these sort of heels. They do exactly as they're told by their superior. And this guy is somehow talked his way into this group, but he is very much his own man.
He is the Daniel Stern of this film. And he has the exact same comic beat later when they're all rummaging around the house, I think, trying to find the chip when they finally infiltrate. And they're all like completely fucked up from all the traps, and they meet in the kitchen with the living room or something. And they're like, it's not upstairs, it's not in the bedroom. And then he emerges with like some potato chips. He says, yeah, it's not in the pantry either.
yeah,
that's good.
That's great. Like, he's an idiot. And so when we first see him trying to penetrate the perimeter of the house, and he puts his pliers into the electric current and gets absolutely blasted. And then at the same time on the other end, we've got this guy had phenomenal eyes. The actor who plays Mr. Burton Jernigan, a guy called Lenny Von Dolan.
Lenny Von Dolan is almost as good as Burton Jernigan. What the fuck? Where did they find these guys?
Burton Jernigan is just, I can't get past it. Anyway.
Is it the ultimate comedy name?
I think it is. So he's simultaneously getting electrocuted by different means around the back. And they've got this dual, like, from every angle, northeast, south and west, this kid's got the house set up. And it just, it is unrelenting. And they could have cut, I would say, 10 to 15 minutes of this part of the movie to their own advantage. But you do get the feeling that everything that comes before it is in service of, like, I feel like the weight of the Home Alone franchise that they were carrying was entirely distilled into this part of the movie.
Of the villains getting real injured?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't want to talk too long. I want to keep these episodes snappy because we're going to be watching this film so much.
Absolutely.
But here's something. Raja Rosnell, who's the director, he was the editor under Chris Columbus in Home Alone 1 and 2. And same for Mrs. Doubtfire. They were the editor-director team there.
Man, I'm telling you, the DNA lives on in this movie. They did not abandon the franchise.
Literally angry that they used the same theme song at the same original soundtracking because I, as I said, haven't seen this movie, but I know by reputation that everyone was outraged about how much they dropped the ball.
I understand at the time. I understand in the vacuum of 1997, I understand the outrage. But in the modern day, it's a romp. You heard it here first.
Something to look out for in your second watch, Monty. The villain who gets the lawnmower dropped on him.
Do you mean Burton Jernigan, Tim?
Oh, is that Burton Jernigan? I don't know which one's of which here. So when Burton Jernigan gets the lawnmower on him, when he pops up after the injury, for which he looks very unscathed, which I was very relieved for. I'm glad they didn't like put lacerations on his face to show me the blades are gone. He's visibly wearing a lapel microphone with the wire like just front and center in the shot. So they've got like just a total mid shot of him, and you can see they've mic'd him up for some reason, which is weird because it's quite a tight shot, and they easily, I would have thought, could put like a boom above his head.
But I feel like that would be because they're using a lot of very futuristic technology. Like, they're communicating through Bluetooth and walkie. Like, I feel like that would have been part of, because they're all on very small radio mics to communicate with one another when they're inside of the house.
You've got more faith in this movie than I do, bud.
I got faith coming out the wazoo. Something for you to look out for, Tim. A cameo by Jamie Foxx. Tell me where.
Oh, no, I saw that. Yeah. The music video that's on TV. Now, I watched the film. I was there.
I don't doubt it. Well, we'll see you guys soon for episode 2 of this emergency season. We hope you're all staying safe out there. Something I tried yesterday.
One out of five. One out of fucking five for this.
Yesterday was washing my hands. Pretty good fun. Worth looking into.
Give it a rating, guy.
Home Alone 3.
Yes.
Two thumbs up, 5 out of 5. A perfect film.
See ya. In Home Alone 3, the stakes are Alex, who's 8, has to protect a proprietary microchip from terrorists who would use it in a missile to evade radar detection, presumably to be able to kill a lot of people without an anti-aircraft ammunition system being able to take it down. What the fuck?
The cat sat on the
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.